Welcome to Suffolk Matters, where all of Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News, opinions, and insights you won't hear anywhere else. Here's your host, the president of New York's largest independent union, Suffolk AME's Dan Levler.
Welcome to another edition of Suffolk Matters on Walk 97.5 and 94.3 The Shark, where Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News and views you can't hear anywhere else.
So my guest this morning is Jeff Greco from J.B. Greco & Associates and Blue Line Wealth Management. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning.
And listen, you know, we tried this once before not too long ago. There was some issues in how that show kind of came together, and so we wanted to take a second swing at this and actually, get the information out there. So I just wanted to start out, you know, like we've known each other for quite some time, but if we can just go into a little background, you know, what it is you do, what your relationship is with AME and the other unions you work with. And
okay, great. Well, thank you, Dan. Thank you for having me. Essentially, I've been doing this for a long time. I consider it a long time, almost between 25 and 30 years, depending on which end of it, because I officially was insurance licensed in 1986 when I got out of high school. Worked my way through college and then eventually got my securities license, went into the stock brokerage business back then, which was very popular. But, you know, quickly realized I wanted to do more than trade equities and essentially wound up at a company back then called IDS, which eventually became American Express Financial Advisors, and now it's Ameriprise. Essentially, we did full-service financial planning is what we did, and I did that for about 17 years. I eventually became one of their field vice presidents for most of Long Island and Queens. But essentially, the business changed, the company changed, a lot changed, and it was more important for me to be able to continue to help people, and I went out on my own roughly in 2006 or so. So I've been doing that, you know, this a long time, opened up my own businesses, and essentially now kind of work with all aspects of not just financial planning, but also help individuals, and, you know, mostly we deal with corporations, unions, municipalities, and we do everything from telemedicine to insurance to financial planning.
Sure. Yeah, and you know, you and I have talked about why you made that shift, right? You know, not why did you get into, you know, this business in the first place, but more why did you, you know, shift away, open up your own shop, so to speak, and start working this way. And you know, you always focused on helping people and where is the maximum impact to other people. And you know, very recently there was an article down in Florida. There was a weather event down there, and there was folks across 18 counties that got really impacted by the storm, and there was concern about, you know, mental health, right? That's one of, you know, I say it often, is one of the positives on what we went through with the pandemic and the financial crisis. You know, on a global level, people started understanding that mental health wasn't such, it had a stigma attached to it that it doesn't anymore. Everybody realizes that at some point in time, someone's going to need help. And to the credit of these folks in Florida, they put together a mental wellness program through Access Health. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about that program?
Essentially, that program is not only do we perform and provide behavioral health, but we also provide urgent care as well. So traditional telemedicine, you typically would call a doctor, call an 800 line, tell them what's wrong or her what's wrong, and essentially they could call in a script for you. But you know, pre-pandemic, we've been doing that since about 2013, and pre-pandemic, we decided that we wanted to go deeper into the behavioral health scenarios, which typically is called mental health, but we title it usually behavioral health. And you know, we've had a lot of experience in that, not only personally, but also in the business world. And we know that, you know, traditionally, when it comes to the basics of behavioral health and mental health, everyone knows, you know, typically, you know, there's anxiety out there, there's depression, there's bipolar, BPD, there's a bunch of common issues, mostly OCD, and a lot of that stuff can be, I don't want to use the word fixed because fixed isn't the right word, right?
Right.
But essentially, and that's typically what people would say, but about 80% of people with one of these afflictions can typically live a normal life and, you know, perform at a very, very high level with just some basic therapy.
Right.
And the problem is pre-pandemic, roughly 10 to 15% of people had these afflictions, and now post-pandemic, they're saying as much as, you know, 2/3 of people have some type of affliction that's going on. And so we thought it was pretty important to be able to help people.
Sure.
So we put together a panel of different providers. So I work with a couple different provider groups down there in the South, and they actually perform the services for that group. And when the, you know, the hurricanes and the tornadoes come through, especially down there, the state of Florida is pretty good at being able to focus that and get the people the help they need. So,
no, that's good. You know, and that kind of leads me into, you know, I guess the next little bit to talk about. But, you know, we touch base, you and I, you know, you do some work for AME membership, and then also through our benefit fund, you pick up deputy sheriff's corrections, a couple of other handful of groups. But you're always concerned about who it is you're helping, right? And plugged in on. So when we have these conversations, you know, you talk to me about the differences that you see in, you know, office workers versus, you know, folks working on the side of the road or whatever else, and the whole nine. It's just, I think it's an area of distinction. You know, we work with a lot of different people on a lot of different things, and you seem to be focused on who it is you're helping, not as a general, you know. Sometimes I talk to people and they say, well, you know, we want to help X amount of people. They don't care about the individuals, and you focus on the individuals. You know, really, what drives that for you?
Well, you know, I think it's a lot of probably how I was brought up and, you know, kind of where I came from, right? I came from, you know, a family that my dad was a ex-city cop or who got disabled on a job, never made it to 20 years, only made it to 17 years because he broke his back. So, you know, we grew up very, you know, let's just say below, you know, below middle class. We had the paper routes. We did the whole thing. You know, we talk about how we used to deliver newspapers together and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But the reality is we didn't know what economic class we were because it wasn't important back then, right?
Right.
I mean, you just, everyone just seemed to get by. It all kind of worked out. Today it's a lot different, right?
Yeah.
So it's a lot different based on social media, based on trends, based on, you know, everything, including types of sneakers you're supposed to wear and handbags you're supposed to have and cars you're supposed to drive, right? So we see over the many years that I've been doing this, people, it's almost cross-section of the groups out there and the population that people who make a lot of money, and when I say a lot of money, you could qualify that however you want, whether it's $500,000
right.
a year or $200,000 a year, and people who make little money, you know, $45,000 a year or $25,000, whatever the number is, they all seem to have the same issues, right?
Yeah.
So most of them overspend. Most of them, you know, have too much in credit card debt and, you know, think that paycheck will never end, and somehow, some way they're going to fix their issues without ever actually really fixing their issues.
Right.
So because of all that, you know, I think I've always got satisfaction out of helping people.
Right.
You know, especially in my business, I think, or this type of business, you know, most financial advisors like to run their business as a business. So they qualify or quantify who they're going to take as a client.
Right.
How much they're going to charge in fees, how much time they're going to spend. And it's all about being profitable, making sure that you get to that magic number you want to get to as quick as possible. And I don't think I ever really lived by those standards. My standards were always more about the more people I help, probably the more it's going to help me.
Right.
Because that's the way I was brought up.
Right.
And it always seems to work out that way.
Yeah.
So I have a great staff back in the office. So my staff is amazing. They're always there to help me. They have the same philosophy as me. Recently brought on a partner as well, Sean Carey. Who's been amazing, again, has the same philosophy as me. So we'll sit there with, you know, a member of your group that may have zero assets, is contemplating bankruptcy.
Right.
And, you know, also because of all that, has the stresses of not only work, but also home and maybe the children. So, you know, they're in a bad way. And I think when they leave our office, at least they have a plan of what they should do.
Right.
And then on the flip side of that, there's the person who's worked for 30 years, has a great pension, saved, you know, six figures in their retirement plan or their deferred comp plan.
Right.
And they're confused as to what do I do?
Yeah.
What do I do so this lasts for the rest of my life because I'm retiring at 60 years old. And, you know, right now, you know I need that to last maybe 25, 30 years.
Yeah.
Whereas our parents and grandparents didn't think they were ever going to live that long. We know we're going to probably live that long.
So, yeah.
So, you know, and we enjoy both of those clients and most importantly, everybody in between.
Sure. Yeah. No, I listen, you know, I get calls from folks tell me, you know, the help that they received in reaching out to you. And I like getting those calls for sure. The ones you wouldn't think I like, but I do like to get is the people that called me and said, well, you know, I went to see, you know, I went in to see, you know, Jeff Greco. I spoke with him personally, and he said I'm doing everything right and that I don't need to use him. And why I like getting that phone call is because, you know, we're accustomed to anyone who's in business or anyone who's trying to run something, you know, and again, it's a little different. It's a labor union, so the business model isn't the typical business model, but you do run into people who are, you know, they're like you said, you know, they structure their business in a way to reach some level of profitability or whatever else. To get those phone calls from folks that say, hey, listen, you know, I went to see him, but he said I'm doing everything right, and that, you know, that reinforces to me what we've, you know, what we've talked about, you know, your personal philosophy on life, my personal philosophy on life. That's a good thing. But it's an interesting point that you bring up, you know, if I
could just make a point on that one. A lot of times those people are also, you know, let's take us, for example, when we go, you know, buy a car or you're going to go make a major purchase, you might shop around a little bit. Right. Mm-hmm. And even though you have, you know, your person or your guy, as people would say.
Right.
You still might check out those prices. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it's the same. And some people who come to us, you know, I know they're working with their, you know, brother or sister-in-law or their family friend or somebody that they're right. close with, but they'd like a second opinion as well. Mm-hmm. And again, many times, you know, if they're doing a pretty good job, there's no reason to make a change. So that's typically the advice we would give them.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. But when you talk about folks getting ready to retire and, you know, you take a civil service job, you know, like you say, you focus on the individuals involved. So you've gotten to know some of my members, know how hard it is they work, how serious they take the services they provide to the people in Suffolk County. But now they're facing this whole new way of being, you know, we all of us actively working, or, you know, you've got that paycheck coming in and, you know, once you hit a certain number, whether it's years or number in a bank account or whatever, you're going to stop working and you're going to go enjoy your life. And now you have to structure your life in a way where you're not getting these paychecks quite the same way. And, you know, can I afford to get a vacation home? You know, maybe, maybe not. Can I afford to go on vacation? Maybe, maybe not. Should I be, you know, buying X, Y, and Z for the house? Is it time to remodel or whatever? And these things, there's a lot of questions to be answered there, but there's also that financial component. Mm-hmm. And so being able to come in, you know, I mean, the goal, I think anybody who ever took a job and said, okay, I'll stick it out here, the goal is to never go back to that job again, right? You want to get to that point where you retire and you can just leave.
Right. I would also say that, yeah, most of your members, when they retire, they're retired. You know, yeah. A lot of other groups, when they retire and do something else. But, you know, your members, especially because they have to work, you know, whether it be 25, 30 years or whatever right. the number mm-hmm. is, they want to make sure that they're going to be okay. And again, typically most of them have done a pretty good job saving throughout the years into the deferred comp. You know, they have the pension. Hopefully they haven't borrowed from any of that stuff. They probably saved a little bit on the outside if they could, depending on kids and college. So they know that they were probably paid less than they could have been paid in the private sector. But you know, the pension that they're going to receive, as well as the benefits, are extremely valuable. You know, and I share with them all the time the fact that they, the health care, even though now there's a little bit of a cost to it, but that health care package could be worth, you know, $30,000 a year.
Right.
In addition, now, from the job that you've done and your board has done over the last 5 to 8 years, the benefits this group have are amazing. You know, the benefit package, I don't think, can't be matched.
Right.
Because you provided now long-term, short-term disability for them. You have life insurance, as well as, you know, the behavioral health programs. Right. So, and some ancillary programs, you know, everything from some
credit, optical, dental.
You have, you even put cybersecurity in place for them. Yeah. So, you know, it's almost menu item of services that it's all free.
Yeah.
You know, and it's pretty amazing. It's a pretty good package. So I think, you know, that's helped them a lot, and they see the value in that. But like you said, when they come in and they say, I never want to work again, they need to make the right decisions prior to retirement. So they come see us. They go see the people at the county. They see your people at the board. And everyone together helps them kind of make those right decisions. You know, I had someone actually in yesterday from a from a group who was, it was an interesting conversation because, you know, they were determining whether or not they should continue to work or take a promotion that they might get. And, you know, it works out that the promotion they might get doesn't really generate any more income based on the income they were receiving.
Right.
So it almost doesn't make a difference.
You get added responsibility and potential liability as well, right?
Right. I mean, you know, your members, they're already overworked and you're whatever it is, 15-20% understaffed.
Yeah.
So that person would typically, you know, who might be excited about that promotion, you know, it just might not, you know, it's irrelevant in the equation, so to speak.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's a big issue what we're looking at this year and having conversations with the new administration is very receptive to the idea that staffing level shouldn't be so low. When people pay their taxes, they receive government services for it, and there should be people there to provide that. So recruitment and retention is a big driver. It's a big motivation for us right now to kind of sit down and talk and work on things. And the big driver behind the recruitment and retention issue is, you know, compensation, right? You know, so one aspect is having enough employees, enough coworkers to handle the workload so you don't feel like you're drowning all the time in the work that you have to do. But also that you're, you know, you're valued in your compensation so that you can actually afford to do things.
And I agree with that. And I think, you know, it's a change in philosophies. And most importantly, I think the younger generation, especially based on the way they've grown up, which was much different than we grew up.
Sure.
And again, it goes hand in hand with their financial health as well, that, you know, they almost can't imagine working somewhere for 25 or 30 years.
Right.
It's like beyond their, you know, comprehension to say, I'm going to stay somewhere for 20 or 30 years because, you know, they're, the typical younger generation is used to moving, you know, quickly through everything.
Right.
Like you see social media and everything else.
Right.
You know, so the idea of staying in one place. But also, I think a big amiss on that is that they don't understand also the benefit, right? So if someone sat them down upon an interview or a job hire, or even maybe when they take the test,
right,
and they got a package that said, well, if you actually take this job, you may not make X number of dollars that you're expecting, but all the benefits you're going to receive are worth this. And then when you retire, they're worth this. And then, you know, your pension over that many years might add up to be $1 million or $2 million.
Yeah.
When we were at any private Fortune 500 company I ever worked for, which was only a few of them,
right,
you'd always get that benefit package at the end of the year that showed the value of all your benefits that they were paying for, because they wanted to make sure you knew that.
Yeah.
And it always was, back then it was even a big number.
Well, listen, applying for a civil service job in Suffolk County is pages and pages of all the things bad that could happen to you if you don't do the job right, right? And we want to attract employees. And you talk about that idea of you know, the younger generation wanting to have some mobility in their jobs. Partly, I think, as a philosophy on, you know, that's the only way to get ahead. You know, stay somewhere for a little bit and then go somewhere else and get more value. But for those folks that want a diversity in their job titles and their responsibilities, I mean, government, there's 924 job titles in Suffolk AME alone. You can transfer all over the place, stay within the system. But I think government has to do a better job of, like you say, talking about the benefits that are there, having this full list of stuff. And most people don't find out about any of these benefits until they've taken a test. They go on their own time. They spend their own money. They take a test. They pass. They finally get hired. This process could take years sometimes just to get hired. Then you come in for your orientation, and that's the first time you find out about your health benefits, what your pension might look like. And, you know, but there's also been changes. The state has made some changes. Federal government made some changes that make things more difficult for somebody coming into a civil service job where you say, I'm going to retire. I'm going to have a lesser pension than the people I'm working next to. I'm going to be doing the same job, if not more, and I'm worth less. And that has an adverse effect too. So that makes extra work for folks in the union world to try and, you know, get the state to kind of reverse some of the changes they put.
And like I said, it ties into that financial health, because one of the most successful ways to get what you want in retirement or long term is to be consistent, right? You know, from day one, if we get to meet with your younger hires, we share with them that, you know, whether you're 22 years old or 28 years old, you don't wait. You know, start saving, put money into your deferred comp. And, you know, some people say, well, I don't really have anything to save. I said, you know, we usually say, well, at least start with $25.
Right.
Or start with $50. You know, and You know, I when I was at back then IDS, American Express, there was this fellow that was there, and he was there for he was the oldest financial advisor in the company at the time. He was in his 80s, and he had been working for 55 years.
Wow.
And he owned so much real estate, and, you know, I don't even think the income he made paid his taxes.
Right.
But he just did it because he loved it. He loved his job.
Yeah.
And but he used to sit us all down one at a time and take us to lunch and teach us lessons in life and show us statements of people in the 40s and 50s who would save $5 a week or $5 a month.
Right.
And that statement, you know, 40 years later had, you know, $500,000 in it or
right.
$200,000, yeah. whatever the number was. And it was all about consistency, and that's what he was trying to teach you, is to you have to train your clients to be consistent and save. And again, today's generation is a little different. You know, they'd rather try to play with meme stocks, you know, or GameStop.
Yeah.
And you know, there's that movie out now about GameStop and how you could, you know, you can make millions, but you can lose millions on a lot of this stuff. But,
right.
Or crypto or something along those lines, although I'm a fan of crypto, but that's besides the point. But the reality is that there's no getting rich quick when it comes to retirement. You know, you need to, if you want, you know, if you want some money in the future, you should save some of it. That's the bottom line. Right?
Yeah.
So.
Well, listen, I was going to try and trick you into giving some advice, but you already started giving it. I was going to ask you for three.
This is not financial advice.
I needed to put that disclaimer out there.
This is not financial advice.
Okay. But I do want to ask three questions, you know, some recommendations you might have for new hires. And we just talked about that, consistent. Get in early. And I remember you showing me a graph years and years ago. If someone saved on a consistent basis from age 18 to age 25, when they reached normal retirement age, they would have more money than someone who started saving at 25 to 55.
Yeah, right? The number's a little 30. Yeah. I think it's 22 to 30 and then 35. Right. So if you saved for 8 years.
Also not financial advice.
Or you waited until age 35 to start saving. You know, and again, you have to also remember, and a great example is my son is graduating college this year. He got a job offer, which is great, but he's also 21 years old. So what is the best time to save? The best time to save is now, because we all remember, you know, within the next 10 to 15 years, you're probably going to have a family.
Yep.
You're going to have kids. You're going to be saving for retirement. You're going to have a mortgage. And then, you know, you're going to turn around and say, I don't have any money to save.
Right.
But if you start saving now, it'll be consistent as part of your regimen. And, you know, what I shared with him many, many years ago, this was taught to us, and that was, you know, pay yourself first. So you should always pretend that you're a bill, you know, in your paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're paying your mortgage, paying your car payment, paying your credit cards, pay yourself.
Yep.
You know, make yourself a bill.
Future you needs money also.
So whether it's, you know, $50 or $400 a paycheck, whatever it is, write that check out to yourself, put it in a separate account, invest it with your financial advisor, invest it somewhere, and that should be part of your bills. And then whatever's left, then you know what's left over, go spend it. You know, do whatever you want with it,
right?
But as long as you've made yourself a bill as well in your set of bills.
Well, smart, smart. So now, how about somebody in the middle of their career? They're not at the beginning, they're not at the end, you know.
So those are the people that probably have, you know, the biggest anxiety, so to speak, or angst, you know, because, again, they're typically the ones that are somewhat closer to their, you know, maximum earning years, right? But their house is not paid off. They're in the middle of a mortgage, or they just refinanced and now have a brand new mortgage and probably took some money out of that mortgage to now, you know, build a new kitchen and do everything else they wanted to do. In addition, they typically will have kids that are close to college age. And, you know, we find most people haven't really saved enough for college, hoping for that scholarship or a state school or something along those lines. So, you know, once again, we'll typically look at the big picture for them and help them make some of those decisions. But the, you know, biggest issue or question with that person is debt. So, you know, I'd say it's all over the board, but, you know, 25% of them who come in are, you know, heavily in debt, where probably, you know, it's going to be a long way to get out of it.
Right.
25% have no debt, which is great. And then the other 50% typically have, you know, a little bit of debt that they should have, you know, here and there. They get the 0% credit card, they go buy furniture or do something like that with it, and pay it off pretty quickly. So it's all about being disciplined and at that age and then knowing what your goals are. So if, you know, if you're going to save for the college, if you're going to save for the retirement, if you need a new car, whatever it might be, you want to be disciplined at that point in time in your life.
Yeah. And then I guess the final one, which we already touched on a little bit, but somebody getting just about ready to retire within the last couple of years.
Yeah. And again, the best time to kind of look at that is 2 to 3, 3 to 4 years prior to retiring, especially with your group, because there's a lot of decisions to be made, right? So Not only do they have to make a take a pension option, they have to figure out if they have enough insurance to cover the pension in the event of a death, or they taking a pension option, so the health is going to come into play there. They have to figure out what benefits they want to continue into retirement. So with your group, they have to pick a COBRA plan.
Right.
And then depending on what age they're at, there's also Social Security involved and Medicare involved as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, and all these decisions are thrown at them, and they're making all these decisions within, you know, typically 30 days if they haven't planned for any of those decisions.
Right.
And it's overwhelming. And usually most of them just get paralyzed and don't make the right decision. So we suggest, you know, come in as early as possible or talk to anybody who's a financial advisor as early as possible.
Yeah.
And start planning for that day.
That's important. You know, and listen, we're talking a little bit about pensions, and not everybody listening to the show this morning is in a pension system. But it also has to do with, you know, some of what we've talked about already. You know, so a civil servant, a government employee, isn't necessarily making what someone in the private sector would make in terms of compensation. They're usually making below that. And the balance there is that some of the money they would have made if they were working in the private sector and handed to them as cash is actually invested on their behalf through the state of New York so that they have the ability to retire. It's built into the system. So, you know, if they started a job at 22 years old and weren't thinking about their future, well, government thought about their future for them already and invested and put together a defined benefit package for them.
It's a great pension system. It really is. And it's well-funded. It's a great system. It's probably one of the biggest part of their assets at that point.
Sure. So listen, we talked about a lot of things. I know there's a lot more items that we could discuss. But when I can, I can't always do this, but when I can, I like to ask my guests if there's something I didn't ask about that you think I should have brought up. Just to give you an opportunity to get something out there that maybe I missed.
Well, I think they, as Dan would probably want me to say, is think about a position, a civil service position in his group.
Yes.
But more importantly, you know, stay disciplined no matter what you do, especially in your financial, you know, future. And, you know, the bottom line is you always want to be in a position where you have enough money saved so that, you know, if you have it at that emergency, and that emergency could be everything from a health emergency to needing a new transmission to maybe, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, you know, it's a good thing or a bad thing for, you know, one of your children. Maybe your children, you know, one of your child has a great investment opportunity, or, you know, unfortunately that they have an emergency.
Right.
So the question is, if you need, I always used to say, if you need that $50,000 to $100,000, where are you getting it from? Right. And the first place shouldn't be, I'm going to go take a pension loan or a loan out of my, you know, deferred comp plan.
Mm-hmm. Refinance the house.
Right. Those shouldn't be the first options. So that's probably the best advice I could give, you know, the groups we work with typically today, is to just make sure that you're prepared for that scenario. Once you're prepared for that, I think your mindset is better to a point where now you can make better decisions moving forward, and then also live on a budget. And, you know, I don't think you need to write down every dollar you spend.
Right.
And, you know, if you're buying a pack of gum, say, I can't afford it, that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is when you live on a budget, don't spend more than you make.
Right.
You know, one example I typically give people is, you know, when you have a job or you're making an income, and let's say you have a household income, there's two members and they're, you know, both working and they have making $125,000.
Right.
For example, after tax.
Right.
You need to think of that $125,000 as $125,000 bills.
Right.
And if you think of it that way, the next time you're in Costco and you decide you want that $500 barbecue that you really probably don't need,
right,
that's half of one of your $125,000 bills.
Mm-hmm.
Or you decide that you're going to go do something else. And so it helps you kind of, you know, when you think of your money that way and you say, well, out of those $125,000 bills, I need like 80 of them pay the house bills,
right,
and pay my car payments and my insurance and everything else. So now there's only like, maybe there's only 10 or 20 left.
Right.
So it helps you kind of understand that maybe when I'm out with that credit card, I shouldn't be, you know, buying some things that I should be buying.
I've always found, you know, interesting that people, you know, using credit cards and they don't think about the debt service and they say, well, it was on sale, so I bought it now with my credit card. But by the time you're done paying it off, you paid more than what you would have paid if you got it at full price. But Jeff, I want to thank you again. Jeff Greco from JB Greco and Associates and Blue Line Wealth Management, amongst other things. My guest this morning. And Jeff, I know how busy you are. I appreciate you carving out time to speak to us this morning.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. And to our listeners, we'll speak to you next week.